Shadow Falls Badlands. The story so far. In Chapter 2, the man known only to us as the Stranger has left his mysteriously unlocked jail cell, only to make a grim discovery. He's the only one left alive in the entire town of Sagebrush, Texas. While he lay sleeping, awaiting his own execution, someone or something slaughtered every man, woman, and child, leaving behind bodies, their flesh torn apart. Though he looks everywhere, there are no signs of life to be found, only death. Deciding he has to leave as quickly as possible, the stranger also realizes there are no horses. Though a few were found killed, the rest have somehow vanished, leaving him to believe this could have been the work of horse thieves, but hardly ever are horse thieves this brutal. Nonetheless, with the sun setting and the prospect of being stuck here another night, the stranger comes across an aged and somewhat deaf burro tied up behind a house. Loading as much as he can on the burro's back, he leaves on foot, trying to put as much distance between himself and the town before nightfall. And hours and miles later, as he stops for the night to make camp in a dried-up riverbed, he falls asleep, only to be woken up a short time later by the sound of a footstep in the darkness. Chapter 3. It had been the third week after the Americans landed in Veracruz, March of 1847, invading in special landing craft custom built in the naval yards of Philadelphia for just this purpose. As his fellow members of the 1st Division rode into port, the Mexican artillery roared from the hills above them, firing 50-pound shells that exploded in every which direction all around them. Once or twice, the cannon on the hill would somehow find their mark among the densely packed craft, erupting in blooming fulminations of shattered oak and human flesh. Those soldiers displaced and upended from their boats suffered similar fates, as most could not swim, especially packed with all their heavy gear, and were relegated to sink to the mud several fathoms below here in the Gulf of Mexico. One such man, the stranger had seen, his shocked face disappearing below the rough surface of the water, his fingers reaching in vain towards a vanishing sun. Ahead, the first boats touched the beach, having followed the lead of General William Worth, who had jumped out in shoulder-deep water and waded ashore. It was with Worth's 1st Battalion of Regulars he would serve, having seen his first action in the previous fall in Monterey, under Taylor's Army of Occupation. For 3 weeks, they battled the 3,300 Mexican Army regulars defending Veracruz before the heavily fortified Mexican garrison finally surrendered to overwhelming forces. In that time, the fighting had been fierce. He'd seen combat up close, with a smoking rifle and bayonet in hand, and blood on his shoes. But on this night, with the jubilation of the enemy surrender still fresh, he left camp with several other men, looking for alcohol months ago banished from the service by General Taylor himself, and fresh food instead of the hard rations they'd been receiving. As conquerors, the town would be theirs, the soldiers thought. Theirs for the taking. Especially given that they'd brought along with them their rifles, lest any of the locals forget who they were. Their first stop had been a closed store, its front guarded with a flimsy door that offered little resistance to the boot. The man who'd become the de facto pack leader, a loutish bullying type who'd gone by the name Cyril, entered first, destroying everything in his way until he found a cask of liquor. "Tequila," he said, explaining to the other three in detail the nature of the fermented agave. To Cyril, it held none of the stature of whiskey, but tonight it would do. A thin, screaming man entered through the busted front door, his weathered brown face contorted as he rattled off a fusillade of angry Spanish. The stranger noticed him first, and given the thin man's gesturing and spirited demeanor, it was obvious they had broken into his shop. The shop owner's wispy gray hair flying about his head as he roared at the men drinking his liquor and eating his food. Cyril's eyes narrowed as his glass lowered from his lips, having just been emptied for what seemed like the 100th time that evening.
"Shit your mouth!"
Cyril shouted above the din. And as the shop owner continued to bark at him, Cyril drew his arm back and fired his heavy glass in the old man's direction. The glass exploded just above the shop owner's eye, knocking the man to the ground as blood poured down his face. Strolling over, his boots clomping on the floor, Cyril hovered over the now wailing shop owner. With a quick draw, Cyril unsheathed the Bowie knife slung to his belt and slit the old man's throat, stepping away as the gush of blood neared his shoes. Without remorse, Cyril wiped his blade on his pants and slid it back into its sheath.
"When I say shit your mouth, I mean shit your stinking mouth!"
One of the other soldiers in the pack, a mere boy of 15, named Coffee, hooted and laughed.
"You showed him!"
beamed the kid, stumbling drunk.
"Let's get,"
Cyril told the others, not waiting for a response as he headed for the door. Having seen his share of blood, the stranger didn't even blink at what had happened, instead just downing the rest of his glass of tequila in one swallow before following the others out the door. It was outside, in the dark street, they saw the others who had come. The family of the shopkeeper waited angrily for the intruders, and when Cyril came through the front door, an old woman grabbed his arm and spat on him. Angrily, he shoved her aside, her tiny body no match for his brutish arms. With a crunch, her head slammed into the adobe wall of the shop's exterior, and she collapsed to the ground. From the crowd came a shot, the black powder clap of an ancient pistol, firing wide, perhaps meant more to frighten than kill. But it was all young Coffee needed to drop the hammer on the rifle he had brought with him, his bullet shooting dead, a young man holding a club by his side. And as another young Mexican man wailed for his mother and brother, he came at Cyril with his fists, beating upon the killer's thick chest. Suddenly, the boy's eyes bulged, his head tipped backward as he was lifted into the air. Cyril's Bowie knife thrust upward into his gut, his shoeless feet dangling inches from the dirt sidewalk. Cyril dropped the mortally wounded boy to the ground where he lay screaming, trying to hold his guts in with his hands as they spilled out through the 6-inch incision from his belly to his ribcage. With a single slash, Cyril silenced the boy. The stranger stood frozen on the street, his rifle pointed outward toward the crowd, who had taken to their feet away from the scene. Though one person remained, a girl, no more than a child. She stood as the others fled, weeping for her dead mother and brothers, her soft brown eyes full of tears running down her dirty cheeks and onto her neck.
"Let's get,"
Coffee said, now pretty much as sober as the rest of them.
"No witnesses,"
Cyril huffed as he stepped toward the little girl.
"No,"
said the stranger, moving in front of Cyril.
"I says no witnesses."
And with that, Cyril put one hand on the stranger's shoulder and pushed him aside, knife raised, grin across his face. And as the stranger blinked his eyes in the darkness more than 3 years later, hearing the footsteps approaching in the blinding night, footfalls growing closer across the desert floor, he thought of Cyril's cold eyes. Those belonging to a man whose sole motivating force was to cause as much pain and mayhem as possible. It was those eyes and that face he had thought he'd seen momentarily through the closing door of the Sagebrush Jail. The ghost from his past, who had turned and stared right at him. The problem with this way of thinking was that Cyril was no ghost. For everything the stranger knew, Cyril was still out there, and still searching for him. He thought again of that moment on the street in Veracruz, watching in horror as Cyril took the little Mexican girl by the hair while cutting into the top of her head with the Bowie knife.
"Just like we did with them Indians,"
He turned and grinned at the stranger, holding the bloody scalp in his hand. Squeezing the bridge of his nose, the stranger tried forcing the terrible memory from his mind. "It can't be him," he said under his breath. The level of inhuman behavior those men had displayed that night, and on plenty of other occasions, chilled his blood, for it would not be beyond the scope of Cyril's savagery to have engineered what had been done to the unsuspecting people of Sagebrush. The footfall echoed again. The desert played tricks with your ears, the stranger knew. In the dark, it was difficult to judge distance, and from behind the shoal, direction was impossible. He thought of Blue, contemplating momentarily that the animal he decided to leave untethered was the culprit making all the racket. But in the dim light of the moonless sky, his eyes were finally adjusting, and from best he could tell, he could make out the shape of the sagging old burrow, still asleep on its feet where he'd left it. The footstep came again, this time slightly louder. Whatever was out there was drawing closer. Slowly, the stranger lifted his head above the rim of the shoal, knowing if his own eyes were adjusting to the dark, whomever it was coming toward him would easily be able to see him as well. Raising just one eye above the berm, he peeked out. Nothing greeted his sight, no movement. As silently as possible, he slipped his hand across the ground until he found one of the loaded dragoons. Holding it in both hands, he dared not thumb back the hammer lest he give away the fact he was armed. Another footstep, louder still. He lifted his head fully above the berm to get a good look. "It's entirely possible they don't know you're here," his mind told him. Again, he cocked his head, trying to hone in on the noise. Minutes passed, then what seemed like an hour. Heavy became his eyelids as the unsated exhaustion seeped back into his brain. He tried to keep awake, his mind bordering on delirium. And as he realized he couldn't fight it any longer, the stranger sat back against the shoal and let sleep overtake him. But before he could sink into the beckoning unconsciousness his mind desired, he heard it again, a footstep followed by another, and another. As he scrambled in his semi-awake state to look over the top of the berm, the pistol fell from his hand to the dirt. And just as he bent back down, and his fingers found the Colt's handle in the dark, the direction of the footsteps became apparent. They were coming from up the gully, 100 yards away, moving toward him. Step, 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 coming faster now, pace quickening. The stranger turned and pointed the gun up the dry riverbed, which hooked sharply past a large outcropping of rocks. And each new step seemed so much closer than the last. 50 yards. Squeezing the bridge of his nose, the stranger tried to shake the cobwebs from his mind, the pressure in between his temples feeling like a vice crushing his skull. His eye saw it, but he blinked once, then twice before it registered. A thin arc of yellow light coming from around the sharp bend. Light being thrown from a lantern. Taking no more caution, the stranger thumbed back the Colt's hammer, then crouched down so his fingers could scramble about in the darkness looking for its twin. Not for a moment did the stranger allow himself to look away, for the arc of light from the coming lantern grew larger as the footsteps grew louder. Step, step, step. The second Colt was nowhere to be found. Damn it, the stranger thought. Momentarily, he gazed downward, searching, his eyes finally spotting the second loaded dragoon behind his feet. The footsteps coming closer had increased in loudness enough to startle the stranger, for as he looked up, he gazed directly into the yellow ball of light being thrown from the lantern coming directly at him, as fast as if wind were blowing it his way. His eyes, having adjusted to total darkness, now could not focus on what was behind that light as it closed in on him. 15 feet. Racing toward him, the stranger lifted the guns and squeezed both triggers. The twin clap of black powder thunder and muzzle flash lightning filling the minimal breach between himself and that which approached him. But even at point blank range,
The Colt seemed to hit nothing, and the outer edge of the lantern's arc of light was upon him. His mind, primed to the lifestyle of a gunslinger, did not hesitate, thumbing back the hammers on both Colts to fire another salvo, as the lamp itself came up to the very tip of his guns. And inside the dim yellow firelight, he could see the fingers wrapped around the handle of the lantern and the face of the person holding it. The shock of terror striking his heart sent his body into total paralysis. His legs, already weak from physical exhaustion, betrayed him, buckling like saplings under his weight, the twin dragoons dropping from his hand to the dirt of the dry riverbed. On the ground, he pushed himself backward, scrambling crab-like to get away from the visage before him, finally backing into the wall of the berm. The footsteps came closer, as the holder of the lamp came toward him again. The stranger could see the face from his past, a face he'd hoped to never see again in his mind, let alone standing before him.
It can't be you,
the stranger said, his terrified voice coming out like rushing air. And as the lamp lowered, the stranger once again looked upon the face of the young girl he had seen brutally murdered in the streets of Veracruz all those years ago. Blood pouring down her face from the scalp Cyril had cut away with his Bowie knife, the icy bone of her skull protruding from the wound. Her face came down to his level, inches away, her brown eyes piercing his gaze like a blade. When she opened her mouth, beyond her rotting teeth and gums seemed a bottomless chasm of never-ending darkness. And it was from there that she spoke. "Hello, Galen," she said. And that's Chapter 3 of Shadow Falls Badlands. I'm your author and host, Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov. And as always, let me know what you think at shadowfalls@podshowla.com. So the stranger is Galen. Surprised? Perhaps. But I think you will be at what he's done to get here. That and more coming up in future episodes of Shadow Falls Badlands. And of course, big thanks to Black Lab for the theme song, That Night, which you can find at blacklabworld.com. And as always, if you're enjoying the book, tell a friend, tell a neighbor to come to shadowfalls.podshow.com. Until next time, this is Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, fading to black.
There are things I have done. There's a place I have gone. There's a beast and I let it run. Now it's running. You can't forget. There's a gift that you sent. You sent it my way. So take this night, wrap it around me like a sheet. I know I'm not forgiven, but I need a place to sleep. So take this night and lay me down on the street. I know I'm not forgiven, but I hope that I'll be given some peace. There's a game play. There are rules I had to break. There's mistakes that I made, but I made them my way. So take this night. take this night. Wrap it around me like a sheet. I know I'm not forgiven, but I need a place to sleep.